It is episode 65 of the Grey Company Podcast, episode 65, part 2, with our recap of Con of the Rings 2018. Matthew, Dan, and myself got to head up to Roseville, Minnesota, the mecca of all things Fantasy Flight. And as you heard in the last episode, we got to interview some gentlemen from Fantasy Flight Interactive. And in the second part of our episode, we wanted to talk about our general experiences of Con of the Ring and just share with you all the things that we experience and all the awesome goings-on of our wonderful community. But let's start by seeing who's here. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We just had our Austin Fellowship event yesterday, actually.
Oh, cool. Nice.
So it went really well. We had a good showing, and it was a blast. And we I know how Caleb and Matt felt at Con of the Rings when they beat us, because our team was victorious yesterday, and it's something really fun about crafting an encounter deck that just tortures the other team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. That's the main thing. You know, when you have the option, you have to crush people, because we just don't really get to do that in this game too much.
Yep. Hmm.
That's right. How are you, Matthew?
I am doing fine. That's it. End of story. Close out the episode.
That's your story, and we're sticking to it. Good night, everybody.
Right.
Ian is actually at Arkham Knights right now.
Boo.
Or I guess he's probably flying home by now.
Traitor.
With his
death degree mode.
With his day job as part of the Mythos Busters podcast. So the plan is to continue the book club next episode, and we'll get him on there. And it'll be cool to kind of chat a little bit in the introduction to kind of compare the two events and, you know, see how it was.
Yeah.
Probably far fewer tentacles at our event, but we'll see. We'll see how it went. So I flew out early Friday morning. I went through the usual completely unnecessary panic attack of the Atlanta airport. I still sat at the gate for like an hour, even though I thought I was sure to miss my flight. And landed and took an Uber straight to Fantasy Flight. And for those of you who haven't been there, it's a very nondescript kind of warehouse space in Roseville, which is a suburb kind of in the butt crack between Minneapolis and St. Paul. Like, you walk in and it's like this really crazy, beautiful game shop with pictures everywhere. And then around the corner, there was the big event space. And immediately I was greeted by John, Peace and Thought, who we've had on the show. And once I arrived there, like, I was a little discombobbed because I didn't have breakfast. And I decided to have a beer for lunch, which wasn't a great idea.
Excellent.
not when I don't have any food in me. Mm. But once I settled in, man, it was just such a cool, welcoming atmosphere. And we'll talk more about that, you know, as we kind of go on. But why don't you guys talk a little bit about your Fridays getting there, and if you want to, you don't have to go into detail if you don't want to, Matthew, but just kind of your first impressions, I think, of the Fantasy Flight space, since I believe this was the first time for all of us visiting there.
The space is amazingly awesome. They have food, which was pretty good for a gaming center. And then, you know, they had beer, which was amazing because my local store doesn't do that, which is sad. But I got some travel woes getting to Bag End, or whatever we want to call FFG. So I don't even remember when I booked the tickets. I went very last minute. I wasn't planning on going, and I don't even remember us discussing it as a group. I probably just dismissed it out of hand. And then I was like, well, I guess I could go. And, so I booked my tickets, and, you know, I wake up at the butt crack of dawn because there were no direct flights to Minneapolis from Phoenix. And so I had to have a layover in Denver. And I get to Denver fine, no problem. I like the Denver airport. It's a nice airport. And I'm walking up to my gate, and it says that my flight is to Milwaukee. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm not going to Milwaukee. I'm going to Minneapolis. I was like,
or
WTF.
So you think.
So I thought. So I was like, wait a minute. So I was like, I found a space to sit down. I busted out my computer because I couldn't go through my phone quickly enough to find emails to sort of be like, let me look to see what I book. And son of a gun, I booked a flight to Milwaukee. So I go up to the desk agent. I'm like, I am the biggest idiot on the planet. I booked a ticket to the wrong city. What can we do? So basically, the moral of the story is, at least with Southwest, if you fly any leg of a flight, that sort of uses all the funds. And so they couldn't refund me any money for my trip. So I basically had to book a brand new ticket to Minneapolis. And then we had to book a whole new return trip, which wasn't quite as bad because I hadn't obviously flown that, but it was going to be a $600 mistake, and then the person working the desk was semi-sympathetic, and they tried to do what they could, and they just backdated the date of my ticket purchase to when I had booked it originally, which saved me $200, so still a $400 mistake to get to Minneapolis. I guess what they had told me was, had I discovered the error before I had left Phoenix, they could have completely fixed everything. I bet it still would have cost money because, you know, it still would have been booking day of, and I don't know if the person in Phoenix would have been nice, but the problem was I had already gotten on a plane and didn't catch the mistake till later. So anyway, that was stressful. So then I like sat in the Denver airport for like 4 hours or something ridiculous because the flight to Minneapolis wasn't for a while. So I got in later than I wanted and, you know, was $400 poorer. And, you know, I just, Friday was a little rough for me. And so luckily they had beer at the Adventure Center because I had many beers. They had this delicious coffee beer from a local brewery and it was just out of this world delish.
Yeah, we drank a lot of those. That was good.
Yeah, we sure did.
The coffee beer was one of the highlights of the con for me.
Yeah, I wasn't seeing you guys. It was just that tasty beverage. And so,
No. I said one of.
Well, I'm saying it was the one and only for me. So, no, I tease. But so traveling, getting there was a bit of a mistake. But man, I was just blown away by FFG Center. I had no idea it was so cool.
Yeah, Surly. That was the name of the beer. That was the local brewery that did it. And apparently, they were like a big thing. But yeah, just the fact that, like, because this is a local shop, Gigabytes here in Marietta, that serves food and beer and things like that. But just, this was like a full blown kitchen. There were people in, like, the chef's whites in the back.
Yeah.
And they had beer on tap, like local stuff. So, and then, of course, I think we were all a little bit taken aback that they didn't just sell FFG stuff. They sold all kinds of different games and different game companies' products. And then, you know, just seeing people playing while we were meandering around on Saturday in between games, people were playing D&D, they were playing mini games, they were playing like board games. It was just a very, very cool spot.
Yeah.
So anyway, how was your travel, Dan?
It had its own stress, I guess you could say, because I landed from basically 17 hours of travel, depending on whose clock you're using as your point of origin, from getting back from Budapest to Austin on late Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning, I guess you could say. So I did a couple days of work, which is, it's fun coming back to work after you've been gone for 3 weeks. It's just enough time to like forget how to do your job a little bit, which is one of the things I love about travel. But, you know, so I'm getting thrown back into the thick of things. And then I flew out Friday morning to go to Minnesota. So apologies to anyone that interacted with Zombie Dan during the con. I was a little bit out of it, a little bit jet lagged until Sunday.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did it. It's one of those things, the whole reason for the overlap in travel there is that the Europe trip had been planned a long, long time ago. And then obviously Con of the Rings kind of came up more recently and I decided I would do it. But hopefully
Austin
in the future.
Austin had a good showing. That was actually the first people that I saw when after I met John and some of the other free men of the North.
Shout out to Terrence and Caleb, not designer Caleb, for coming from Austin and representing.
It's cool. That was actually my first game was with those guys and another gentleman, a local guy. I can't think of his name, but his screen name was Igloo. And we did WizQuest and got stomped. I think it was probably my fault, Caleb. Sorry. But man, just right off the bat, getting in and playing with folks and just getting stuck in was really cool.
Yeah,
I think, you know, I've said a few times that in the last year or so, I just haven't played much Lord of the Rings for a myriad of reasons. But one thing that this weekend did was give me the rejuvenative shot in the arm I needed to kind of get me back into the game, so to speak, which I'll get more into a little bit later. But I wonder if the first thing we should get into in terms of the con is the whole saga.
Well, maybe we should explain what this is for folks who maybe didn't hear about Con of the Rings. Or again, it was under my radar, and until you sort of said, hey, Matthew, there might be an extra ticket. I'm like, what are you even talking about? So there, what was the Con of the Rings?
What was the Con of the Rings?
That's a great question.
Well, it was a con.
It was a con.
There were these rings. Con of the Rings, you guys can fill in the gaps as I go. Con of the Rings was the brainchild of John Peace and Thought, like I said. And
MC Dog, I want to say.
Yeah, like MC Dog. And they have a little group up there. Like I mentioned, the Freemen of the North. That's kind of like the tag they use for their play group up there. And this John told the story a few times. I think it was him and MC Dog, whoever, or one of the other guys. I know there's another guy named Nick who was part of the group, but I think it might have been him, driving back from Gen Con last year and thinking, like, how do we get this environment to our backyard, basically, because they're all local to the Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And I think from there, they started to develop the idea of making it Lord of the Rings specific. And over the course of that, of the last year, they put the idea together, and then over the summer they kickstarted it, which was to help, you know, pay for the event space at FFG and to, get all the money up front so they could get some awesome swag together, which we'll of course talk about. And then they drew people from all over the, literally all over the world. Well,
yeah,
North America and Europe, yeah. The Western world, to come and just hang out and play the Lord of the Rings. So it's really just a fan convention that these guys put together.
Yeah. And there was 90 people or so registered for this dang thing. And so yeah. I think when I walked in late Friday night-ish, I don't know what time it was, 6-7 o'clock maybe, I walked in and I was blown away at how many people were there. FFG has this huge sort of like room off to the side, a convention space essentially. And it was packed with people just playing LOTR LCG. It was literally amazing. I was just floored. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how many people were registered. You know, I was in a just, I don't know, a funk. And it was super, super cool to see so many people coming together, flying to middle of nowhere, Minneapolis, to play this little game of ours.
Yeah, and I think you and I, Matthew, kind of had the same goal, which is just to hang.
Yeah.
Because, like, we, you know, like, I saw you last year because you came to Atlanta, but I hadn't seen Dan in probably 2-3 years. I'd never met, like, Peace and Thought. I hadn't seen half the community since I went to Gen Con like 2 years ago. So my number one goal was just to come and hang with people.
Yeah.
But I was so sucked in by the event and by the passion that everybody had for the game that I found myself playing like all day long Saturday and then Sunday. So it was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the reason why I jumped on the opportunity to do the con when it, when they first started kind of talking about it, I think I first became aware of it on Discord was, the description you gave of it, Derek, is exactly what I wanted, right? Is all the experiences I had with the community at Gen Con in the past, and especially just hanging out with you guys and having beers, were overwhelmingly positive. But some of the other stuff about Gen Con to me is I would not call overwhelmingly positive. I mean, it's expensive, it's crowded, there's, you know, transit issues, hotel issues, it's Indianapolis, like... No knocks on Indianapolis, but I've been to many cities in the U.S. and I wouldn't put it on my list of favorites.
Nope.
Something about the smell of that city. it just, the idea of saying, hey, let's take the good parts of Gen Con and put it in a more focused thing where it's 3 days of like very much Lord of the Rings and Lord of the Rings community. And it's people that, even if we've never met them in real life, like interacting with half these guys on Discord and then getting to meet them face to face. And, you know, I got to run a bear draft and do some of the kind of things that I've done at the past in the past at Gen Con. It was kind of perfect though, right? It's like the good stuff without a lot of the bad. So it's definitely exactly what I needed.
Yeah. I still will never get used to people coming up to me and saying, hey, I recognize your voice. And it only happened twice at this particular event. I feel like at Gen Con it happened more, but a lot of times that was from progression series. But yeah, that's one of those things I'm always like, how do I respond to this? It's always very nice and very flattering that people enjoy the show. And those, so it's not a criticism, but the mild level of fame, quote unquote, we have in the community still sort of is always a little like, oh gosh.
Yeah. Everyone was very nice. Like, I think I think at least for me, and I think you guys too a little bit, there was some concern at how people perceived us because we interacted with people. Really, we were just kind of holed up together playing games and hanging out because we're buddies and we hardly ever see each other. So I think I was a little bit concerned about people thinking like that we were at our own like too cool for school table, like, you know, the jock table in the cafeteria. Yeah. But everyone was super nice and appreciative of the show. Everyone who brought it up was very, you know, like I said, they just really enjoyed what we do, and they were very encouraging, so that was super cool. and none more so than Caleb. So I think we maybe could I was going to say we could jump ahead because Saturday we got to hang out with Caleb, but I guess it'd be kind of more fun to keep things in chronological order. So Friday we played a good bit. I mentioned the saga thing, which I'll talk about later, but about like 8 o'clock or so after Dan got trounced by Caleb and Matt, Sean, formerly of Cardboard of the Rings, currently of Mythos Busters, invited us out to go to a brewery and then to karaoke. And we just, we couldn't say no to that. So, you know, I wanted to sample some of the famed Minneapolis nightlife. But I wasn't sure if I was going to get it. But we did get to go and hit a very cool brewery, and then we got to sing some karaoke with Brian, again, formerly of Cardboard of the Rings. But we also got to spend a good amount of time with Morten Dahl of Discord. And I mentioned people from, you know, Europe and various parts of the world coming, and Morten is from Denmark. And, man, it was just cool. I didn't expect to get to hang out and sing karaoke and drink beers with, like, a chap from Europe. Over the course of the weekend. So I guess it's just kind of another kudo to our wonderful community.
Yeah. Much like you, I had wanted to go solely to see you and Dan. And I had even said, I don't even want to pack decks. I don't even really want to play the game at all. I have no desire. You know, it was to see you guys. I guess I didn't worry at all what people thought. It didn't cross my mind, although perhaps it should have. But it was cool. I mean, Brian, I hadn't seen since, I think, my first Gen Con many moons ago. Sean and I met at a Gen Con or two, so I hadn't seen him in forever. And I wouldn't say that we're buddies, but it certainly was nice to see both of them. And even Caleb, you know, and Matt Newman, who we got to see for a little bit of time on Friday night. It was, I mean, it's been many Gen Cons since I've seen them. We mostly now just interact on Facebook and you know, like each other's posts and stuff. So it's, you know, it's great to see these guys in real life because, you know, pretty much I've never had a bad Lord of the Rings encounter that I can, no pun intended, that I can think of in terms of meeting people who, you know, watch the progression series or the Grey Company, or just gamers in general who are oblivious to both of those things. Pretty much every time at a Gen Con event or this, people are just super cool and chill, and I don't know. It was just, it really was a cool time, and Morten definitely was a fun guy.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to explain this to a friend of mine at church today, because I mentioned my trip, and I was saying how, like, the combination of cooperative game, deck-building game, and Lord of the Rings, I think, reigns in, or, you know, brings in a particular personality type, and so... Sure. I think it makes, you're going in with at least like three ticks of common interest when you meet somebody.
Sure.
So I think, you know, that's a good reason why everybody gets along, you know, and everybody is so friendly with each other. And one thing Luke said in our interview Saturday morning was how he couldn't get over how quiet it was in the event space. And I didn't even think of that because I don't play a lot of competitive games. I used to play some Magic.
Yeah.
I played Conquest when it came out. But like just that, the vibe of a co-op game, you know, it's totally different. And it was, and I paid attention to that after Luke said that the room was very chill. You know, everybody's just enjoying the game. We had a couple of people shouting, you know, when an epic moment happened, or, you know, Brosy Cotton was especially enthusiastic. But, you know, just the whole vibe of the weekend was very cool. And I said, sadly, you know, Sunday before we left, it took me until probably like the middle of the day Saturday to get into like chill vacation mode. And then, you know, the next day we have to leave. But, yeah, it was very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's just to add on to what you said as far as the you know, that Venn diagram of how much we have in common with members of the community, even ones we've never met. It's something that I've been trying to do every time I travel is reach out and meet up with people, and it's fascinating to me that of all the communities I've been a part of, this is a community where I can basically have two or three interactions with someone on Discord and then say, hey, do you want to meet up for beers or coffees in your country? And then meet someone I've never met before in like Prague, or, you know, met another couple in Munich. And the only thing I really have in common with this person is the game in some cases, and just have these amazing experiences.
Yeah.
And Minnesota was just yet another kind of reaffirmation of that, is you just meet so many cool people that you might not have everything in common with them, but there's enough of a common basis there that you end up having really great interactions. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. So that was Friday. And then Saturday we got up a little groggy. A little groggy after karaoke and travel and beverages. I forget how dehydrated you get just traveling. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we got up, had some breakfast, and then really the first thing we did was jump into the saga. Like, I was excited to play, it would have been Helm's Deep that morning with you mm-hmm. guys. And it was cool. So they had, you can go on, I think on Peace and Thoughts blog, and definitely on Durin's father's blog. Was that Visions of the Palantir? Is that his blog?
I think so.
Yeah, and he's got some pictures up of this big poster they had made, mm-hmm. and it was their Saga Extravaganza. They'd broken it up by day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and they had each of the Saga quests, including some of the PO print-on-demand ones, achievements that went with each one, and then they had boxed in the epic events, quote-unquote, which is where we all played together, and we had to mark up a certain number of wins to actually complete the quest. So prior to that, if one person beat the quest, it was considered, you know, done or unlocked. But with the epic events, the culminating events, at least five people had to beat it. And then the achievements were super cool. They had some really funny ones that kind of came from the films and things like that. I think there was mm-hmm. One on Sunday for the Battle of Pelennor, which is like it still only counts as one. And you have to kill two Mumax during that quest, which we almost did. But we played Helm's Deep and we won, which was very surprising. But more surprising
we're
pros,
bro.
Yeah, not surprising at all. We do a podcast. but more surprising was the fact that I got super into it. Because like I said, I went in, I was just kind of like, I want to hang out. Especially on Friday, I was kind of burnt out just from travel and stuff like that. But on Saturday, it was like, man, I got super excited about the achievements and the whole saga thing that they had planned out, which I hadn't really paid that much attention to, admittedly. Oh, yeah, nerd, right, because you didn't get excited at all about it.
No, sure.
You were the first one to jump up and write Grey Company next to the quest as soon as we beat it. So I think we nerded out to equal levels. but I don't know. What was your guys' general feeling about the sagas and the achievement thing, besides the fact that you like to win and put your name by it, Matthew?
It was cool. And so basically, if you won or you got the achievements, they had a lot of raffles. We'll talk about those prizes, I'm sure. So you got extra tickets in the raffle. Spoiler alert, Dan and Derek won like 50 things. I only won once. But anywho. So it was neat. I mean, I have not ever played the campaign. I've mentioned that a few times on the show over the years because for whatever reason, we just didn't start it. I think a lot of people were kind of waiting for all six boxes to be out. So I finally started it with two of my local buddies. And we're not, I don't know how far we are. I think we're the Breaking of the Fellowship is where we are. So most of these quests I've never, ever, ever, ever played. So I had no clue what was going on. But just the idea, I mean, just I feel like the thought that went into the achievements for each quest and like printing up all the stuff. These guys really went all out. It was very professional. It was a well-oiled machine. I don't have enough good things to say about this event that I thought I was going to hate and didn't even know what the hell it was 2 days before. And, you know, but it was just really, really cool. I think Cardboard of the Rings has some photos. I've definitely seen them floating around on Facebook. Maybe the Lord of the Rings LCG Facebook group that's not tied to a show had some photos of the thing. If I can find it, I'll post it on our Facebook. But it was just a really, really neat idea. And you know, they would announce over the loudspeakers when people
Dungeon Gamer.
Yeah, which was our favorite expression of the whole week. I think I said it for like 24 hours afterwards to myself throughout the day. But they would announce, you know, who beat, you know, got the achievement first or beat the quest, and it was just really neat.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the sagas, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I am kind of stalled in my own, you know, my own solo saga. I want to say I'm at like Journey of the Crossroads or something, but I just kind of was like wanting, you know, on that limbo space of, do I go back and make a new deck now that all the quests are out? Do I, you know, continue forward with the deck that I had that I was doing the sagas on? You know, what exactly do I do? So I hadn't played them in a little while, and we kind of gave up on doing sagas at the Austin weekly meetup that we have, just because the cast, you know, who shows up is kind of different week to week a lot of times, so it's very difficult to have a consistent set of players to really, you know, you obviously need some consistency there to be able to do the sagas. So that's where this convention makes a lot of sense, is, you know, you're going to be there with the same group of people, because you get in on Friday, everyone's pretty much leaving on Sunday. You're going to have 3 days where you can play multiple quests with, you know, if you want to play with the same decks, you want to play with the same players, you can. And it was, I don't know, it was really cool. It definitely, I had never played Helm's Deep three player before, and I was thinking, like, for most of that game, I'm like, we're gonna die, and we ended up winning, and it was awesome. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Same thing kind of happened Sunday when we did the Battle of the Gate, the Black Gate opens, because we revealed back in episode 64 that we hadn't played Battle or the opening of the gate, the Black Gate opens, excuse me, and one of the achievements was to try to make it to 8 rounds. And for those of you who haven't played it yet, you just have to survive for as long as you can. And each round you get more cards and more Nazguls pop up and your threat goes up. And so that was a really, really cool quest that I think really gobbled up the vibe of a desperate battle that you just can't win. And, you know, and the other cool thing was that some people did the epic mode where one group is playing that while the other group is doing Mount Doom. Mm-hmm. But what they did for the con as a whole was to take, I may be misremembering this, but I think they took the highest number of rounds that people survived, and they made that kind of the number of attempts that you could do later when you did the Mount Doom quest. So we were all essentially working together to destroy the ring. Mm-hmm. And the Free Men of the North guys did a good job of kind of playing that up as this epic achievement of destroying the ring, which was pretty cool. Yeah. But it was the same vibe. Helm's Deep, we're like, we're going to die. And with the Black Gate opens, same thing, we're going to die. But we made it for 8 rounds, and we got that achievement, and we were all very proud.
Achievement unlocked. And, you know, we might have to revisit our Friends Don't Let Friends Play Outlands episode, because they were sort of the MVPs.
Yeah, I want to talk about decks we played later, but Dan's Outland deck definitely, piloted by yours truly, definitely saved the day. So that was Saturday. We started with some Helm's Deep. Then we did our interview with Luke and Tim, and I was very pleased because initially it was just going to be Luke, and that would have been a great interview. I was, Luke had a lot of really cool things to say just as a game fan. I don't think I realized what a game fan he is, but it was also a nice surprise to get Tim on there. Not Tim Garrison, who's the boss at FFI, but Tim, last name unknown, who is the technical designer for the game. So I hope all of you who listened to it, the previous episode, enjoyed that, because having both guys on there was a real treat. And on top of that, we got the VIP treatment. We got to use one of the little playtest rooms in the back to interview them, so there wasn't too much ambient noise. But that was a great conversation with those two.
Yeah, they were
guys. It's really interesting to get insight into, you know, just kind of the way game designers think and kind of the way that they're going about, you know, it's no easy task making a game, you know, of any genre or style, but I would say it's probably even harder making a Lord of the Rings game because it comes automatically with so much expectation.
Mm-hmm. Especially this one, because it's a game based on a game based on a book. Mm-hmm. So there's almost another level of expectation.
Yeah. What I thought was really interesting is how much they sort of paid attention to the community. They really liked being there. He had a point of saying, we want to see how people actually play the tabletop game, because that's going to inform us for how we're, you know, going to sort of do stuff with the digital game. And perhaps the most interesting thing I thought was that they said that they even look at some of the blogs. I've never heard of this one, Hall of Beorn, but they said they actually use it to sort of, you know, look at cards and sort things. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, the fact that they were there, I think, spoke volumes.
For all 3 days.
And the fact that they go to relatively unknown blogs like hallofbeorn.com is really telling. Because,
so telling.
You know, because they said... Because I remember, like, trolling Luke a little bit on one of the streams about, you gonna go to Con of the Rings? And I think eventually Tim Garrison reached out to them and was like, well, Luke and Tim, you guys just got to go. And what was surprising to me was that a lot of the people there had never played the digital, and everybody has their reasons. Like, I've been vocal about my excitement for the digital game because it suits my lifestyle these days. But for a lot of folks, you know, like they said, they want to wait until it's on mobile, or they want to wait until it's full release, or till co-op is in place, or they just don't want to play that trash because they're tabletop diehards. So I think it was a cool opportunity for them to get some attention, and like you said, to get a little feedback from the hardest of hardcore Lord of the Rings nerds.
Yeah, they had 2 computers set up, people could demo. It was neat.
Yeah. But yeah, did you, Dan, feel like you kind of had, I don't know, maybe another level of curiosity being a being a programmer as well when talking to these guys?
Curiosity and empathy, honestly. I think I can speak for a second for a lot. I have a fair number of friends that work in the video game side of software development, and then a larger group of friends that just do kind of business software, because that's what I've done, for basically the entirety of my career. So I have empathy and I think probably a deeper level of understanding of the challenges that they're facing, just in terms of, the technical side of things, where someone says, we found this bug or we have this issue with the game and we want you guys to change it. It's not, I think the external perspective on these things is, it's a game, so it should be way easier to do it. Like obviously with the physical game, if you have to errata, it's a pain in the butt. And we have all these cards now that don't work the way they're printed. And I think people assume, with a digital game, it should be easy. You just go in there and make the change and everything's cool. And it's one of those things that always, gets my inner curmudgeon warmed up when I hear assumptions like that, or some of the comments in the Discord and whatnot about, how do they not know all this stuff going in? And it's like, it's a process, right? There's an evolution of making something, whether it's digital or a physical board game, that I don't know if the people that consume these games always appreciate how much effort and heartache goes into the decisions and the evolution of that process, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
the word you used that came up in the interview is iterative, and the fact that there's different iterations happening as the game is developed. And I like Luke's metaphor as well. It's kind of like you're fixing your house and you fix the garage door and then the sink explodes or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, just because that's just the nature of code and the way these games are built. So it's not quite as easy as to say nothing of developing cards that are interesting and scenarios that are interesting. The actual code that goes into it is its own whole other monster too, which I found pretty fascinating.
Yeah, they were great to talk to. I mean, I was, if you guys have listened to the episode, I was mostly quiet because I haven't played the digital game since the Collector's Edition came out. I played for a couple of days and, life gets in the way, and that's no reflection on the game for me. It's more just whether it's television shows, whether it's, physical games, video games, books, I'm notorious for starting things and never finishing them in my adult life, whereas as a kid, I would, read a book in a day. But regardless, so I haven't touched the digital game because I just don't think about it. And that's the problem. Like, video games, if they're on a shelf, I forget I own them. Or, like, books on my Kindle. Like, I don't, if it's not on my bookshelf, I don't see it to think, oh, I should read that. I have hundreds of books on my Kindle that I've never read for that reason. But so the digital game is just this little Steam app on my desktop that it doesn't even have an icon like some of the other games do. And I just kind of forget that I have it. And so I just didn't have a lot to talk about or a lot to ask because I haven't played it much. But it was still, I thought, a really interesting conversation, even for someone who's not as deep into the game as you are.
Yeah, for sure. And then Tuesday came the announcement that there are big changes to the game economy, which we'll talk about later. But so that was Saturday lunchish, and we just played the rest of the afternoon and enjoyed. And
another cool thing was that they had the adventure pack that just dropped this past Thursday for early sale. So that was kind of fun in that we got to pick it up about a week or so early. And then they had like older fellowship event kits you could buy, which I thought was kind of interesting as well. If you were there at the event. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah. And lots of stuff to give away as well. A lot of PODs and the old fellowship events and a couple mats and things like that, and shirts by shirts. And that was another interesting thing that kind of speaks to the level of dedication and organization that these guys put into the event. Wasn't just a bunch of dudes sitting around playing, and women, of course. There was shirts by shirts there to sell stuff. And then one of the artists who worked on the digital game, who actually did all the card backs, was there, and her name escapes me at the minute. I'll have to look it up. But, I just thought that was a cool touch. I bought a few things from her, also because there were card backs in print there that you could buy that are going to be featured in the digital game that aren't there yet. But, just between FFI and shirts and this artist who I feel terrible whose name I can't remember, which I will look up before we stop recording, where there was just another wrinkle how cool this event was.
Yeah, I mean, for a volunteer event, and I would assume that none of these guys are convention organizers in their real life, it was quality. I mean, it was very professional.
For sure. So go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to have a conversation. I need to look up her name because I feel bad that I don't remember it either. But I was talking to her about the whole challenge of having your own distinct art style, but also fitting within an established franchise like Lord of the Rings. And that's kind of an interesting challenge, I think, for creative people. Mm-hmm. And it also carries over to the game, I'm sure, is like you obviously want to have your own signature of your own design aesthetic, but at the same time, it has to be appropriate for Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. True.
And she not did match a good the movies.
Yeah, yes. the dude, again, whose name I can't remember, who composed a lot of the music for the digital game, talked about that with Luke on one of the streams, you know, about the idea that, you know, you want to reference the movies, but you want it to be your own thing. And I think he did a good job with that. And kind of the same thing with the art as well, and that it's referential to the table. I mean, it's table. Emily Dillahunt was her name.
There
by
we
way.
Go.
So like the card backs, and then of course the art, which is basically from the tabletop game. You know, they work in some of that as well. So it was cool. That's good. And there was supposed to be a second interview with Caleb that we had worked out. We're gonna go chill at his house and chat with him a little bit and record it. But alas, it did not happen. We went over there. He was very generous. He gave us a lift. It was us and his buddy Jason and Chad from Cardboard of the Rings, just mm-hmm. hanging out at his house. And, man, we just got caught up playing worldwide wrestling and board games and stuff and just, you know, goofing around and chatting. We were all so tired, at least I was so tired, that we didn't actually record. But yeah. Getting to hang out was really cool. I had a good time just eating scorched bratwursts and chatting about games and about why, you know, what's wrong with the Lord of the Rings movies and things like that. And I think also Caleb, you know, was able to share some stuff with us kind of person to person that maybe wouldn't have been able to share on the podcast. So it was cool. He was, like I said, he was very generous and having us over, and we got to learn how to play Master of Orion.
Yeah. That was a fun little board game. He had mentioned that he kind of wanted to thank, you know, the great company and Cardboard of the Rings for what we do for the community. And so he had us over and he burnt some brats to a crisp, and it was a little Mount Doom there in the backyard. They were still good. You know, we ate all of them, I think. And just, it was a great time. He's such a nice guy and so down to earth. And
yeah,
I mean, I can't say that I know any other game designers because I don't, but certainly he and Matt Newman are just really, really cool guys. And I enjoy hanging out with them and talking with them. And the fact that he had us over just to show his appreciation, you know, as a guy, you know, for us and what we do for the game was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's why I use that word empathy, is it's like, and even some of the conversations that we had with him about, you know, his own like perception of his career path and, you know, what his goals are and stuff like that is, it gives you a different perspective, right? When you, mm-hmm. when you get to actually talk with the designer of a game that you love as just another human being and have kind of just that beer and pretzels kind of conversation. And then on the other side of it, you know, now like it provides a context for when I see criticisms of the game, or if I see criticisms, you know, and I would say for the most part, like I'm off of Facebook, so I probably see less of the toxicity there. But like every once in a while, you'll see someone just kind of go off the handle and say, oh, this sucks and whatever. And it's funny. And obviously people have the right to disagree and have their own take on things. But I think it's different, right? To like some of the things now that I would say to him about how I feel about quests that he's designed or design decisions that he's made are much more tempered when you meet someone face to face and you realize mm-hmm. like, oh, they're a human being and this is his job. And he goes in on a Monday when he doesn't want to go into work, just like I go in on a Monday when I don't want to go into work. And
his weekend at work to hang out with fans.
Right. Yeah. It's my long-winded way of saying like, it's funny how you find a better way of communicating with people when you've actually sat down and had a conversation with them in their house.
Right.
Yeah,
you make a good point. But it was cool. We had a few conversations about his old competitive gaming days, mm-hmm. and this came up with Luke as well, but he relished us with tales of glory from when he was the world champion of the Cypher Star Trek trading card game. And I think him and like I said, Luke as well, it was interesting to hear their background in gaming and just their straight up passion for card games. Mm-hmm. And the way they love seeing decks come together and people enjoying the gameplay and things like that. they really do care. And I think it speaks to, I guess the fact that we all care is kind of the mantra of the community. We really care about gaming almost on a philosophical level. You know, I think Luke said something like, you know, life is hard. We want people to have fun. And I think that's kind of what it all boils down to. It's a way to kick back and, enjoy the time that we have together and bond over things that are important to us and that are fun. And then beat the crap out of each other on the WWF, Xbox game.
Right.
Yeah. I think got a deeper insight into how important that is on this trip, because I just more and more as I get deeper into my career, my responsibilities, and just, you know, being an adult and owning a house and having all these other things, like my responsibilities seem to increase every year and my free time diminishes. Mm-hmm. And so to have like 3 days to just hang out with you guys and meet people that I've only ever, you know, done direct messaging with on Discord or whatever, and just be a part of the community and just kind of, you know, just kind of bask in like how positive and wonderful yeah. this community is. It was really, it was rejuvenative, I would say, for me just to have that.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good word. Rejuvenative. So let's pivot and talk about the decks we were playing.
Okay.
And I'll tell on myself, well, I'll make a long story short while you guys kind of remember the decks you actually played. But leading up to the con, I was like, I don't want to bring a deck. Like, there's going to be 100 nerds there with multiple decks. I'll be able to borrow a deck from somebody. But then a couple days before, I thought, well, I'll bring something to have, just to kind of have something in my pocket. And I was going to make a dwarf discard deck just because I haven't really played that before. And man, breaking down the decks I had pre-built and trying to put the deck back together, it just restoked in my mind why I haven't played a lot of tabletop. It's just like, if I have an hour, it's going to take me a friggin' hour to break this deck down, put it back in the box, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized, so I didn't break a deck, but I will say that part of the reason why is because I recently migrated my collection to the Card Hotel, the little 800-count boxes, and that was a bad idea, at least for me. Having it in binders is so much better because you can browse them. Everything has its place. You can visually see where it is rather than flipping through and just guessing where it might be and then fumbling through the cards that way. So that, coupled with having so much fun at Con of the Rings, motivated me to reorganize my cards again and put them back into binders. So hopefully that will translate to more play over the next year or so. But Matthew, what was that deck, that Baragon deck that you brought that saved our bacon so many times this weekend?
Yeah, I had two. I had a Dale deck. I don't know that I used that one quite as much, but I definitely played it. And then the deck I played mostly is my current campaign deck, which is Spirit Baragond. It was Gimli and Legolas, their tactics versions, although I sacked Gimli to the Balrog, and so now it's the new collector's edition dwarf, Thorin Stonehelm, or whatever his name is. But really, Baragond was the MVP, because there's a lot of cards that ready him, and outside of Unexpected Courage, and, you know, there were some rounds where he was defending, you know, 3-4 times. He's and then getting to keep someone's threat sort of level. Baragond, either version, is just MVP in most quests.
Yeah, he's a workhorse. What do you think of Thorin? Because he's relatively new.
He is. The problem
is he had a good moments using that direct damage ability.
He did. The earlier quests, he's a dud because they all have toughness.
Was that Helm's Deep when they had toughness?
Yeah, so that sort of sucked. Can't use him then. But once we got a little bit later on, I definitely used his discard ability to give that one extra point that I needed, which was super handy.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, Baragon rules.
Yeah.
And Dan, you brought a whole stack of decks.
That's me. I'm weird, and I'm always experimenting with multiple different ideas. I will say that one of the highlights for me was playing just a completely degenerate Outlands deck against Caleb and Matt Newman. One of the things that they did, all these different drawings, you know, all throughout the 3 days of the con, and as Derek mentioned, like as you do achievements, you do various things, it gives you extra entries in the drawing. And for whatever reason, I guess it was my lucky 3 days or whatever, I won a ton of times. And on one of them, you know, some of the prizes you can get, I already had some of the nightmare packs, or I didn't want to like take someone else's, you know, take away someone else's ability to get some of the packs. So I chose to play against Matt Newman and Caleb in, you know, like head-to-head Wizard's Quest, or yeah, I guess it was Wizard's Quest. So and this comes full circle to the whole, you know, our first episode is The Grey Company, where we all ranted about Outlands. So I brought a Denethor, Hirluin, Aristor Outlands deck and played it against them. And it had, like, probably the best opening hand I'd ever had. So by, like, the end of the first round, because of between a very good tail and, like, some Captain's Wisdoms or whatever, I had, like, six Outlands allies in play, and I had an ally Faramir, so I was, like, questing for, like, 20 or something. It was completely ridiculous. And they ended up beating us anyway, which is my favorite part of that story. But, yeah, it turns out the designers of the game are really good at designing encounter decks that screw with you.
That's weird. I wouldn't have expected that. But I love that Outlands deck. I guess I had a different version with Imrahil. I played a couple times over the weekend. And yeah, exactly what you said. It was, we were kind of poo-pooing it early on. But the fact that I was questing for like 50 at a certain point. It was like the only way that we could have survived.
Hey, I sent two to the quest pretty regularly. That was pretty baller. Well,
that was baller. I mean, you more shined in the defense phase. But... being able to quest for that much and then ready X amount with four long and all that stuff. It was the only way we survived. And there's a couple times where you should take more credit, Matthew, because there's a couple times early on where there was some treachery that like dealt X, you know, did one damage to all questing characters, whatever, which would have cleaned my board completely. But the test of will was very timely. So yeah, man, Outlands.
The benefit of Spirit Baragon is that he is spirit.
That's right.
And he opens up test of will.
Cancel that junk. But yeah, so Outlands definitely rules, even if it is a little basic.
Yeah. Dale is the thinking man's Outlands, and so
that's right.
I have no problem playing that.
Yeah, that was one of the decks I brought, and the more that I play that, I played it yesterday at our fellowship event. I really, really like Dale because, and it's, I think Matthew's dead on, is it is, you can see where there's like that linear progression as you get more allies with more attachments, it just gets stronger, but the fun thing about it is there's a lot of decisions about how you move the attachments around and what order you play attachments in, and, you know, just, it's fun. There's a lot of like room for fiddling, I would say.
Yeah, it's neat.
I also got Danny.
The other deck that I brought, and it's the first time I got to really test it, was a Grimbjorn deck, and all I can say about that is he's a freaking monster. He's so powerful.
Yeah, he was pretty bomb.
Yeah, I think it was every time Blackgate opens, we did one of the things where you had to engage somebody and they make an immediate attack. You're like, okay, they're dead.
Yeah,
it turns out a giant angry bear is really good at slaughtering Haradrim that run at you with a scimitar waving.
Right.
Missed opportunity in the Battle of the Five Armies film. But anyways, so being a bit of a bum, I got to play several other decks. I got to play a really nice Sylvan deck that John Peace and Thought let me borrow, which is great. It was the shootiest deck I've ever played. Like, everybody had ranged, and I had like a swarm of ranged elves that didn't help me at all in WizQuest because we got location locked. What can you do? You can't shoot your way out of a big field you're trying to get walked through. I got during the cube draft, shout out to Wingfoot Ranger, I put together a basically like tactics leadership Gondor swarm deck that worked out pretty well. Problem was I only played it a little bit because that was about the time Matthew showed up. So I was like, instead of holding my beer, I was like, hold my deck to the other guys so I could go and hang out with Matthew a little bit. And then I got to play Dan, your Noldor deck was really cool. You know, it's, again, that was Aristor, so I'm like shuffling through the deck really fast. But that was a good one. That was very enjoyable as well. So it was cool. You know, it was, even though I felt a little bit like a bum not having deck of my own, it was cool to sample what everyone else was doing in the current meta, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun seeing other people's decks and how they go about things. On Friday, I ran zombie version of me ran the latest version of the bear draft for six people. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I took the previous version and just updated it to include Dale and some of the new cards. And it's always I love seeing what people do in a limited format, you know, where mm-hmm. you don't have, you can't just automatically go, oh, I'm going to do 3-0 Steward of Gondor and make, and have that be the engine of my deck. It's like, you got to kind of piece things together and make it work with whatever you can draft. So it's cool.
For sure.
And everyone, all six players were able to make decks that were solid and beat the quest that they were playing against without going easy mode or anything. So it's it speaks a lot to where the card pool is now, that you can do a limited format and get a deck where it's like, hey, that's a viable deck.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the other highlights for me was, I think it was Friday night, we had just overheard John talking about like this teenage kid who's like lives on a farm or something.
Was it the Iowa beet farmer? Is that how he was described to us?
Yeah, it was coming up, and so his name was Teddy. Hi, Teddy. We hope you're well. I think Teddy was explaining to me that he was working on some kind of blog content. So if I find that, I'll put it on our show notes. But anyway, it was cool because he was a great dude. We got to have a great conversation. He's a fan of the show, so he's instantly one of our favorite people.
Right.
But on top of that, it was cool because everybody kind of took to him because we knew he's a young chap.
Yep. And he only has the core set in Sands of Harad, I think.
Right, he's new to the game, new to Minneapolis. His parents were very generous and drove him up. So that kind of, again, goes back to our earlier conversation about the quality of the community, and everybody kind of came together and encouraged him and that kind of thing. So it was cool. It was cool to meet everybody, but it was very cool to meet Teddy and hang out with him a little bit.
I know. I wish younger nerd me would have had something like this. Like Dan, you know, most of the prizes I already had. And so I only won once, which was a $25 gift card, which I had every intent of using it for beer, because why not? It was a $25 gift card to the FFG Center. But then I sort of thought about it, and I was like, you know, this poor little kid, I overheard him talking to Caleb about how he doesn't really have any cards, and he mostly plays solo because he doesn't have anyone to play with, and he wondered, like, what would be a good hero for solo play, and Caleb had sort of recommended Gandalf, and I was like, well, $25, that'll almost buy him the Saga expansion, and so I just gave it. I said, you know, I know I'm your favorite host of The Grey Company, so here is... which he did not say, but I just assumed because I'm everyone's favorite. And my own favorite. And so I gave him, you know, my gift card, and he picked up the set with Gandalf in it. And he was a little bummed because he couldn't get the deck to work quite right, at least when I had talked to him. And he really wanted to play a game with us, but we weren't able to fit that in. So hopefully next year. But yeah, it was super cool to meet you, Teddy. So hopefully having fun with Gandalf.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be telling this story, Matthew. Now the secret of you being a nice guy is going to get out.
The badass with a heart of gold.
Oh, my God. I know. I chose a kid over beer. What's wrong with being nice to a kid?
What are these feelings I'm having?
Next thing you know, you're going to give to charity or something. Ugh, my goodness.
I'm back to my Gollum side. Sneagol was only out for a brief
moment.
Flip
the card over.
Slinker and Stinker. I mean, I would encourage anyone that was on the fence about this. Like, I'm definitely going to make an effort to try and go next year and hopefully plan my other travel so that I'm full, you know, 100% me when I'm there and not Zombie Dan. But yeah, if you're on the fence and it's the kind of thing that you can spare the time and the money to do, I would definitely encourage others to... they've already said they're going to do it again next year, and I'm, you know, looking forward to it because it was just really cool, especially to have the designers of not only the board game, but then the digital game there that you can just have conversations with.
Yeah, for sure.
Not even necessarily about the game, right? I mean, you can talk about Star Trek with Caleb, you know? It's kind of cool to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah. It snowed on Sunday. I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. And my little desert self did not pack appropriately, nor do I even own appropriate things to pack. So
that might have actually been, besides the snow, the highlight of the trip was us, you in particular, getting harassed by the dude from the karaoke bar.
Yes.
So we were sitting outside waiting for our lift, and we were all like shivering and chattering. And this guy's like, this is nothing. Wait till it's like -30 in December. We're like, you don't understand. We're from south of the Mason-Dixon.
And I don't do -30 in December. That's when I GTFO. But
right. So the snow was nice, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it was surprising. But it was cool. Yes, everyone must come out if you can. And again, you know, people are just nice and enjoyable to be around in this community. And the fact that, like, folks came from Canada, which isn't that far, and Holland and Germany and Denmark is just, I don't know. It's still amazing to me. Like, I remember texting my wife when we were at that brewery with Morten. I was like, I'm hanging out with a Danish person. What in the world is he even doing here? This is crazy.
Totally crazy.
Jeez. Yeah, they're all Vikings, right? He's probably just trying to take over the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I think most people in Minneapolis or in Minnesota were Vikings a couple of generations ago, so there's something.
Yeah, it's
true.
Kindred spirits.
They're all Viking or Viking adjacent. I put them all in the same bucket.
Maybe they're all the bad Vikings. Like, they couldn't cut it, so they had to come over to the New World.
Yeah,
that's probably about like 400 years or 1,000 years or 400 years removed from the pillaging age, so my history's way off.
That's right.
Okay, we better end this before I ramble some more. So,
I want to hear the Derek rambling hour. I'm all ears.
I'm going to start a separate podcast where I just have a few drinks and just talk to myself. And
So what was each of your guys' drink of the night? I think this should be an ongoing.
I think this is the first episode I've ever recorded stone cold sober because
what?
I have to drive. Got some D&D to play tonight, so I've got to drive.
Okay, nerd.
Yeah. I know.
I just had a little bit of Jose Cuervo neat before we went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah. I've just been making mezcal related drinks lately. That's been my kick. So this was a Paloma with mezcal.
I made a mezcal cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving last year.
Ooh,
mezcal jalapeno cranberry sauce. It was pretty
amazing. You can come over to my house and make mezcal cranberry sauce anytime, Matthew.
It's a little late to revisit the format of the show, but I guess we could incorporate some kind of beverage related moments.
Yeah. Achievements unlocked.
Beverage-related achievements. Well, before we go, we have some exciting news. As Matthew said, we won. We won a lot. Somehow I was the top score of the digital game.
Cheater.
With only a 240, I guess.
What?
Because
I call hacks.
Hacks. 275 is max. Nobody got max, but I guess it was because all the hardcore people were busy actually playing the tabletop game. But anyway, that allowed me to win a collector's edition courtesy of Fantasy Flight Interactive, and courtesy of Dan, he was able to stuff it in his bear-sized bag because I just brought a little backpack. So we have a giveaway we're going to do. We're going to do basically separate. We're going to break this thing down. And so if you are currently a patron, you don't need to do anything. You are already entered into our drawing, and we're going to do a separate drawing for the two-player limited edition starter, and we're going to do a separate drawing for the Mithril edition digital code, which I suppose we should do sooner rather than later since play interviews are going away. And then finally, if you decide you want to become our patron because you're interested, you will be entered into a drawing for the art prints as well as the replica ring. So people who are already patrons, you guys are already in. And if you join us after hearing about the giveaway, you'll be included in the drawing for the beautiful art prints to add to your gaming room or wherever you choose to put it. So on the next episode, in which we continue our book club, we will announce the winner. So tune in for that. And then we will contact you via email once we decide who the winner is, and it will be purely random.
I hope I win.
Random.org. Yes, we're just going to shuffle it around. Matthew's going to miraculously win, and it'll be great.
Not rigged at all. No collusion.
No collusion.
Oh, please, everyone, vote.
vote the correct way, though, please.
No, doesn't it have to be the correct way? Please just vote.
Nope, if you're not going to vote my way, just stay home. The election's December 6th.
This has been episode 65, part 2 of the Gray Company podcast, brought to you by our lovely patrons. If you'd like to help us out with hosting fees, travel costs, etc., please get to patreon.com/grayco to sign up. As always, you can get in touch with us through our website at graycompanypodcast.com. From there, you can connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, and so on. Please send your emails to thegreatcompanypodcast@gmail.com. We love reading your questions and comments on the air. Moreover, we love your custom cards. So the next book club will cover the Tower of Cirith Ungol, the Land of Shadow, and Mount Doom chapters. Things are heating up. So if you have any cards for those, send them our way within the next week or two. We'll
about as hot as Caleb's brats.
Hot as Caleb.
Scorching.
Hashtag.
Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, farewell.
Bye.